Hi, and welcome to another episode of CineNation. I am Brandon Sparks.
And I'm Ben Gertz in the beautiful Portland.
And I'm Anna Catley, checking in from Toronto, Canada.
And I'm Hunter Barcroft, checking in from Atlanta, Georgia, where it's raining and has been raining for a week.
It's like Portland, where it rains constantly.
All day.
50 degrees and sunsets at 5 o'clock, so it's pretty optimal right now.
Oh, nice.
Oh, God.
Oh, gosh. So, Ben, have you seen Fred Armisen lately? Because he wasn't on the Seth Meyers show last night, and I wanted to know if he was in Portland with you.
No, I haven't seen him in the street lately, but I did watch an old episode of Portlandia the other night.
Which episode was it? Tell us which episode.
I think it's episode 5 or 6 when there's two girls, two shirts, and that's the only thing they have in the store. Do you remember this?
Yes, I do remember this.
What a great show.
I don't know.
I don't know it either.
It's pretty great.
The only one I know is the put a bird on it sketch.
Oh, that's like,
and the one where they talk about Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
That's a pretty good one.
Where they try and convince each other to watch it, and it's like a curse that gets passed on.
Oh,
you should watch the Sacagawea episode. That's one of the best ones by far. Sacagawea. Yeah, they're doing there's a historical reenactment. And they both play Lewis and Clark in front of all these kids at a school. And basically, there's supposed to be a third actor there playing Sacagawea, but they're not there. So they keep on talking to the fake person there playing Sacagawea, but they're like, Sacagawea! Sacagawea! God! I hate you, Sacagawea. And like, all these kids are just staring at him like, what's going on? And there's no one there. They're just talking to this invisible person.
They have no limit. And I think that's what makes the show so funny is like, when you think you've figured out like a pattern or like a boundary, they intentionally go right there and then they go further. And it gets weird, but I love it. So.
Cacao.
Anyway.
Cacao to cacao.
Thank you, Hunter. Anyway,
if you watched the show, you'd understand the joke, Brandon.
I don't understand it. I apologize. I'll watch it at some point. I'll put it on my list of 50 shows to watch that I'm still behind on. Yes.
Speaking of shows to watch, what have you been watching lately?
Who, me? Or anyone?
Yeah, you. Me. You've been on some like weird trip around America.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about that.
I was at Austin Film Festival. I had a short film screening there. And I was there for a few days. I didn't really go to any screenings besides the shorts that were there, but I went to a lot of panels. And Austin Film Festival is known for, it's called the Screenwriting Film Festival. And so the panels I had, first I went to was Terry Rozio, I think his last name. He co-wrote Pirates of the Caribbean series, National Treasure, Aladdin, a number of like Disney things, but stuff outside Disney. He talked about rewriting process. He gave us his actually large pamphlet that he wrote for his website about the Hollywood film structure and how like the power structure within the Hollywood industry. And it was really interesting how to think visually in scripts. And then he also rewrote like people's scripts on stage, like the people who were in the audience. He took their scripts and like rewrote some scenes, and it was a cool exercise to have. Next guy was Michael Arndt, and Michael Arndt is I think he won the Oscar for Best Screenplay for A Little Miss Sunshine, and then he co-wrote Toy Story 3, and then he wrote some stuff for Star Wars Episode 7, and his panel was about Toy Story 3 and the Pixar process, and basically what was really interesting with the Pixar process was how they write, direct, edit the film, and then they repeat that 7 or 8 times. And they have what they call the Brain Trust, which is John Lasseter and Andrew Stanton, Pete Docter. And the movie they do, they write, edit, direct it, they put it all together, they show it to the Brain Trust, they get all the feedback, and they go back to a brainstorming meeting where they come up with ideas for the rewrite of the script. They do the rewrite. They do the animation, do the drawings for it, and then redo the entire film, and they repeat that process until the film's perfect to go into animation. They spend 3 years on writing the screenplay, and then 1 year animating it. And really interesting process that Michael Arndt talked about. What he did was he showed the first script or the first version of a scene they had and then he'd show us the notes that the Brain Trust gave him, and wow. then he showed us the final version of the film and how it changed and how he got to that final part of it. Then I went to...
Well, wait, hold on. That's amazing. Yeah. So you're saying that with each revision, it's purely at a storyboard level, and then it's only after the Brain Trust says, okay, now we're going to animate?
Yeah.
Like, so is it...
Yeah.
Is it basically... Because this is where I've been confused about their process. Like, is it picture locked? I mean, it's script locked, right? When they go into animation,
yes,
it is.
It's picture locked.
Okay.
Picture locked.
Wow.
And so everything is locked. And then finally they go into a year of animation.
Wow.
And he didn't show us the final thing that's in the movie, but he showed like basically everything without them adding the lighting and stuff to it. And it was really, what's really interesting was like one of the things they showed was like, it was very similar to the movie. And I was like, oh, wow, he didn't change anything. And he goes, here are the notes they gave me. And it was like, this is a complete disaster. Redo this entire thing. But basically what it was something that what didn't happen earlier before it for it to make sense.
Mm.
And so it was really interesting of how he talked about his process getting to the certain things. And I think that's why, because that's why he talked about Pixar. He also... When he talked about story, he talked a lot about Star Wars, New Hope, and he talked about Hamlet a lot and Macbeth, and he talked about Little Miss Sunshine. But he talked about how like it was a grueling process, but he learned so much from story on it. And he actually stayed an extra year to work on Inside Out. Because also, too, they have basically a writing team of like 10 people. Even though only like two get credited for it, they have 10 people who they're bouncing ideas off of for the final script. And so he apparently did some writing for Inside Out. And that's a really interesting process of go ahead.
Well, so that team that you said is uncredited, I mean, how does that work within the... I've heard of some comedians talk about having like punch-up sessions where they'll get brought in on a comedy to try and rewrite a scene or a line or... How can we make this funnier? Yeah. And they don't really get credited. You know, they're just kind of there for this brainstorming stuff. But, I mean, how does that... I mean, I'm they're getting paid, obviously. But, I mean, how does that work within the system, you know?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know how they do that. Because I don't know if it's like, this time you get this one, and then the next one you guys get that one. I don't know if it's like a system of it's the person's turn. And I think they probably get a head writer. And like a head writer and one or two other people, and then they're a part of just the punching stuff up, and they're not the physical person writing it. I'm not sure. That's how I think of it, because it's almost like a writer's room where you just pitch ideas.
Yeah, it sounds like a TV show structure, basically, where Lasseter is the showrunner for an anthology series that is Pixar, right?
The shared universe of Pixar.
At this point, some of the anthologies are three episodes now with Toy Story and things like that. But for the most part, they're making these really time intensive and expensive TV episodes. You know, with a shared.
Yeah, that's why they decide to wait so late to animate, and why it's in picture lock pretty much, because it's an expensive process. And basically, because Michael Arndt showed a clip from Lasseter and Steve Jobs when they were talking on the Charlie Rose show from like the right after Toy Story came out. And basically the process they had during Toy Story is the process they still do of doing storyboards and pre-vising it completely for 3 years before actually animating it. And it's because Michael Arndt was like, if live action films did this, we'd have so much more better films than like, I mean, up par or on par with like Pixar stuff.
So I mean, this is like the thing that's so interesting is Pixar isn't secretive about this process anymore. I mean, there's a lot of people that have, you know, shared it. It's in a lot of their, you know, special features and things on disc. Why do you think?
Yeah.
I mean, other than the history of how things have been done at other places, why do you think? I mean, so I've heard of like Bond movies where they'll bring in 5, 6, 7 writers and they'll cycle through and everybody takes a shot at it and rewrites it and all these things like that. But that's a different thing than what we're talking about, which is this writer's room format of, you know, really kind of getting it locked. What?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I get the broader question is why don't other places do that? If it is a, I mean, because they are like 100% at home runs. I mean, there's basically not a Pixar film that's not a blockbuster. Cars 2.
There's some that shouldn't be. There's some that shouldn't be. Yeah, the Cars series. Yeah. The Brave, first one was actually good. First one was good, but
I actually have never watched Cars 2, so I can't comment on Cars 2. That's the one.
I have a small person in my home that woke up every morning for quite a while, and he would just immediately get out of bed and he'd be like, "Cars, Cars." He'd sit on the sofa and say that over and over until the movie started playing. Thankfully, that time has passed, but we were alternating between 1 and 2 to try and bring some sanity to the world.
What does he want to watch now?
That's a good question.
It's Netflix.
Narcos?
Thankfully, they have a kids mode for Netflix. Yeah, it's a lot. There are shows that are on Netflix that you never imagined exist that he loves. There's some little animated dragon show that he is in love with. And he wakes up in the morning, I pour him a bowl of cereal. I don't know if this is a parenting show or not, like as far as a podcast, but he wants to watch this dragon show and sing along with the songs before he goes to school. This is how you raise your kids. I mean,
oh gosh.
This is the same kid that you told me the story about that tried to swipe right on a magazine to get the pictures to change.
Seriously?
So this is a related story. My wife gave him a Game Boy, wow, an old original Game Boy that had Tetris, because she loves playing, you know, old school Game Boy. He got it, and he was like, 2 years old or a little younger. And he held it, and then he looked. It's black and white, right? He holds it, and he starts trying to press the screen, and then he just looks at it and looks at us. He's like, ah. Like, he couldn't even speak, but he was like, why is it broken? Why isn't it a touchscreen? You can't even explain that to a person these days. Like, everything in his mind is a touchscreen. Wow. Like, everything should be a touchscreen. It's mind-boggling.
Wow.
Buttons to press with your fingers? Such archaic.
Now, I will say he learned how to use a mouse. But, I mean, that's really? Because that's at nice. The other end of the pointer was Netflix, and so he figured out how to navigate Netflix.
I mean, when you're desperate for Netflix, you figure it out.
Oh, gotta get that dragon fix.
Look, I do. Like, we do other things besides Netflix, but, you know.
Anyway, I'm gonna get back to So after the Pixar thing, I went to the next day. It was Saving Mr. Banks from Script to Screen. And they had John Lee Hancock, who's actually from Texas, the director. He was there. And then one of the writers, co-writers for the film, was there as well. I talked about the process of how it went from the beginning, how she got it from someone else, and how the story actually focused more on P.L. Travers and her adopted son, and how he was an alcoholic. And they were talking about how it was a movie, but not the movie they wanted to make. I also didn't know that Save Mr. Banks was not developed at Disney, and that Disney came on fairly late, right before they started making it. Like, basically, everyone was already attached to it before Disney came on board. And how basically everyone said yes to the project, the actors. And so it was a cool panel. And then next day, I went to Deconstructing Vertigo. And it was these two directors. One was Rodrigo Garcia, who did a great film, Nine Lives. It was like 9 short films. They were all one takes. But they went through certain scenes of Vertigo and talked about it and how it was important and what they were doing and things like that. Really cool festival overall. Really enjoyed it. So, yeah.
It sounds like really in-depth panels versus like South by Southwest when I went for interactive was just a wasteland of surface level, you know.
Gamergate.
I mean, yeah, there was a bunch of stuff that was just not nearly as interesting as what you're talking about. So that's exciting.
Yeah, it really was. And like they had like, I mean, I didn't get to go on any films because they're kind of showing them late this week, but they showed Legend opening night, but they're showing Carol this week, the Todd Haynes film with Cate Blanchett and Rooney Mara. Oh gosh, what else? Youth, they were showing Michael Caine film, and then I think they were showing Brooklyn as well, which is the one that
I want to see Brooklyn.
I think it was Brooklyn, but I'm not positive.
I've heard lots of good things about Brooklyn.
Yeah, really? it just came out here.
Yeah, I keep hearing such good things about it. Yeah, same here. I've been seeing posters everywhere on bus stops. I've been really wanting to see it.
It kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, and also even I hadn't really thought about even seeing it because the posters looked really generic to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like it didn't really seem that compelling. And then I had a lot of friends who live in LA who've like seen it like a week ago said it was just incredible. So I guess I don't know.
So
I'm a real big fan of Saoirse Ronan is a great actress, and I will pretty much watch anything she's in.
Uh-huh.
And same with is it Domhnall Gleeson? The guy that plays opposite her?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's great.
Dude, he's in everything amazing. Right
well,
now.
Oh, he is great.
He's in everything he is, right now.
Yeah, did you guys see Frank? Did you see Frank? He was great in Frank.
Is it good?
Yeah.
I loved Frank. I really did.
If Thomas was on here,
it's great. Michael Fassbender with a fake head. It's great. It doesn't get any better.
Thomas would talk about this
actually,
forever.
I actually have a song in my iTunes, and it's Michael Fassbender singing in Frank, and it's like the most nonsensical song, but it's so great. And Michael Fassbender, I'm pretty sure he sung it. I mean, I'm hoping he did, or else it's all for naught. But it's great. It's like a very fun film, but it's also quite sad in some parts. Mm. I won't give it all away, but watch Frank. It's on Netflix.
I'll watch it.
At least it's on Canadian Netflix. I don't know if it's on
it
American
is.
Netflix.
It's on American
I'm
Netflix.
I'm pretty sure it is.
It is.
Okay.
We don't have everything. We don't have everything
Netflix.
Y'all have. Like
I
for
mean,
example,
we can't stream Star Wars Episode 7.
Yeah. Like you guys are about to.
I mean, yeah.
Y'all
are
getting that.
Yeah, I saw that tweet from Brandon tweeted at me with article for Canada getting that. That was actually I hadn't heard about it until you tweeted me. Had a little victory dance there. I'm pretty excited. Unless it actually ends up sucking, which I think someone wrote about. Ben wrote about it on Medium today.
I love that segue. Yeah,
about
Ben.
how it might actually
that was a,
suck.
That was a great segue. Thank you, Anna.
Ben, what do you think? Thank you. I think that's my first segue on this podcast. So
that
thanks.
Is a very acceptable entry into the game.
Can you just do all our segues now?
Hunter, take notes, awesome. Please.
Yeah. Dude, I need it. I needed them. Trust me. I am not good at segues. Not smooth at all. Anna, good job.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Ben, tell us about why Star Wars might suck. I'm curious.
Yeah.
Well, Hunter, you're the person who gave me this hot lead on the story idea. But it was basically just a discussion we started of what if, you know, especially because of the prequels, and we'll get into that based on some people's opinions here, but...
Yeah.
You know, because the prequels were just so hyped, the hype is similar, right? That's the connecting thread in my head of people are losing their mind about this new one. Pre-sales are off the charts. YouTube records were set with the trailer releases, all these different things that people go in bananas.
How many years, how many consecutive years had the trailer been watched? How much time was that? I saw the graphic
on your article.
It's like
200 something years now. I don't know why... YouTube wants us all to feel so sad, but they have a metric in the stats. Let's pull it up because it keeps changing, obviously, as more and more people watch it. And I don't actually want it to play right now. Stats. Sorry, this is a little bit boring, but here we go. The time watched is 221 years because there's 55 million views and it's 2.5 minutes long. I don't know why we would ever want to know that other than... to just think about the time wasted in humanity. But I guess you got to take all that and it multiplied even further by like the 2.5 hours that the film's going to be, and it's going to be just millennia, right? 55 million plays.
Well, see, here's the thing too with Ben, because what is that just the official like Disney trailer?
That's the official Disney trailer on YouTube. So I know it's way undersampled.
It's way... Yeah, because so many people posted it after the fact on different accounts.
Yeah.
And that has millions of views for each one almost.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's an ungodly amount.
Yeah, I mean,
So, yeah.
The fun thing about the article is it made me go back and read, like, I found a really fun New York Times article about the hype surrounding the first Phantom Menace prequel.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just fun because people are basically, you know, they were concerned about that one. They were like, I don't know, there's been delays and there's rumors of all these problems with Lucas and the actors and different things. But then they saw the trailer and people lost their minds. And I, you know, rewatching the trailer, I'm like, I remember why I was excited about this as a younger person. We don't all have to get into our ages. Yes, Hunter, you're asking a question.
I I'm looking at this article now. I'm starting to remember why I was so excited, and I think it's this Rolling Stone cover.
Jar Jar Binks.
Says Jar Jar Superstar. Yeah. And it's Jar Jar Binks.
No, so the hook of the article that I don't know goes as far as I'd like or whatever. I don't know. I've been thinking about it for a while, but so it's like, what if it sucks? Because there's just so much hype around it. And, you know, what it gets around to, because you don't need to waste your time reading it, you can just listen to it here, is that basically, you know, just, it really doesn't matter. It's a big budget film that's made primarily to sell toys and theme park rides, and we, like, it will, if it's really, really good, we'll all buy it, and it'll live on forever in our minds, but if it's just mediocre, it'll serve its purpose and make billions of dollars, but it won't, you know, I don't know. There's just so much at play with these big films. We've talked about it in the past where I'm excited that films like this can exist. It's like part of the, part of what makes like Hollywood, Hollywood. Like the latest Avengers movie is like the most Hollywood film that's been made, right? It's just this ridiculous like amalgamation of perfectly polished, no sharp edges, just perfectly honed machinery. But the thing that's, you know, that's so interesting, or like the nostalgia of the original trilogy, right, is like seeing some of the like really rough edges around A New Hope, seeing some of the strange turns that like Empire Strikes Back gets to take, because it's kind of a, you know, there's not quite as much pressure on the film, I think, as we have nowadays. And then, I don't know, I watched Return of the Jedi the most, like as a kid, and you know, there's weird stuff about that.
Same,
there's
actually,
there's little people running around as Ewoks. Like, there's weird stuff in those films that...
That's not weird. That's amazing.
No, it's a great about? Film. But I just...
Yeah. Ewoks saved the rebellion.
It's very true.
They did.
I think these new films have to be so big and so perfect and so amazing and have so many characters and satisfy so many things that it can't... You know, I just don't know that I'm really going to be in love with it, not because I'm a hater, but just because I don't know that they can do it. If they can, then, you know, I'll retract my article and give back all my views to some other Reddit post. But, yeah.
Well, I think that, I mean, I feel like the problem with Phantom Menace when it came out is that it was so dense and political. And it really strayed so far from what A New Hope was all about, which was just like this kind of like guy who wants to go on an adventure, and he feels like he's bigger than the place that he's in. And he just, it's kind of something that anyone can relate to, you know, like growing up, if you grow up in a small town and want to like kind of venture out, it's that same kind of sentiment. And I feel like no one could really relate in that same kind of really wonderful way that people did to A New Hope. And Phantom Menace just isn't relatable in that way. And I think the worry for me with Force Awakens, that there won't be that kind of like small, beautiful story that you can latch onto, which is what drew everyone in the original. Exactly. Yeah. And that's why, and you can go into Empire, which is, you can go from A New Hope to Empire. And that makes sense. It's like logical to have a little more complicated, darker story. But, you know, the prequels just jumped right in, just went like guns blazing, and it just doesn't, it doesn't work as well.
But I think an important thing I'm thinking about now is like, while the original trilogy was very much a hero's journey of Luke and his, you know, progression into being this Jedi, is he a master or a knight by the end of Return of the Jedi? I can't figure that out. But
Jedi Knight.
Is he Jedi Knight? He's not a master. Maybe he is. He is now.
What is this, like a subway or something? You're trying to figure out the management hierarchy? I don't understand. Like what?
No, there's definitely a hierarchy.
It's important, Ben.
It's Padawan, Knight, Master. Qui-Gon Jinn was going to be a master.
Well, until he got chopped up. Spoiler alert.
Until he got chopped up and thrown down that endless pit.
No, he didn't.
Darth Maul.
He didn't.
He didn't? Oh, you're right. Just Darth Maul did. But what I'm trying to say is, I think that the prequel trilogy is more of the villain's journey, because it's what we're seeing Anakin, but we already know what happens to Anakin. We know what he becomes.
Yeah.
They market it so you're like very aware from the very beginning, unless you're like five. When I was little and I saw that movie in theaters on opening day, I had no idea he was going to be Darth Vader. I had no idea. Still mind blown when that realization happened. Yeah, I was like...
Really? You didn't know that?
No, I had no idea.
I wasn't aware.
I had no idea. I was super pro Anakin. And then one day I got old enough and I was like, oh no. It can't be. Turns out, he was.
I love your realization voice, Hunter. Oh no.
Oh no.
Oh no. He can't be. And he was.
And he was.
The big problem...
I mean, the literal poster for Phantom Menace was...
Yeah, it was Anakin.
Little baby Anakin with Darth Vader projected on...
Great poster. Too subtle for some people, apparently.
Hung up on my... that was on my wall.
Anna didn't get it either, in my defense.
That was on my wall before it came out.
I was six. Come on.
I knew from the beginning, Anakin... I was like, this is going to be great. It's going to be a trilogy about Anakin becoming Darth Vader. That's why I went to the theaters thinking at, like,
but, I mean,
7 years
honestly,
old.
Honestly, the prequel, The Phantom Menace, helped me get into the original trilogy.
That brought me in,
and it succeeded in that fact. After that, I was full on board, but it took the greatness of the original trilogy to keep me there for 2 and 3. Because if it was just 1, 2, after a while, I would have gotten old enough to realize that it wasn't that great after...
Yeah,
seeing.
I mean, I had the original trilogy on like the VHS tapes that like that came in the box. That's what I had before the prequels came out. And
yeah, with that intro with Lucas, the interview with Lucas. Do you remember those?
Yes,
so great.
Was it Leonard Maltin?
Yeah, Leonard Maltin does the interview. It's so
George
great.
Lucas? Oh yeah, I loved those.
It was like special features before special features, basically. You know, it was like the intro to the movie.
Which that's something that Lucas did, and I think Disney did as well. That like they were kind of really ahead of the time with that.
Yeah.
With Phantom Menace, one big problem was that there wasn't a focus on a certain character, and there's a great... I haven't watched it all, but my roommate loves it. It's a thing called Mr. Plinkett's Reviews, and it's basically this like random guy who reviews all of the prequel series and a couple other films. But he talks about how in episode 1, there's no protagonist whatsoever.
Right.
Because it should be Obi-Wan, but Obi-Wan's just like, for most of the movie, sitting on a ship somewhere and updating people on like what's going on.
Right.
It's not Anakin, because Anakin's not involved till later on. It's not really Qui-Gon, because Qui-Gon never... he's the mentor.
He dies.
He does die.
He's kind of protagonist. He kind of pushes the story.
I would consider him the protagonist.
I would.
Here's the question related to The Force Awakens, though, is like from the promotion we've seen, who would you say is the protagonist, right?
Wouldn't Rey? I feel like Rey is going to be the... I mean, she's been
Rey
featured
and
the
Finn,
most.
I think it's going to be a two-part deal.
BB-8.
BB-8 protagonist?
BB-8's the main character. BB-8's the most... he's the protagonist.
Yeah, it's...
I saw a little like comic today on... Actually, I think it was on the Star Wars subreddit, so you guys might have already seen it. But it was like the Death Star being like, no, to R2, like, no, we can't do this. Like, I'm the Death Star, you're a droid. And then he's like, finally, like, gives in. He's like, yeah, stick it in my data port. And like, basically, BB-8 is like the result.
It's funny,
like,
guys. You can laugh.
Inter-robot sex between the Death Star and R2.
Oh, man.
Which is like a theory I fully support.
I hope that's
now.
Real.
I want it to be real.
A little mini Death Star rolling around.
Yeah. Can you write that for our Medium? Because that would pick up traction in a heartbeat.
Yeah. It'll be my response to Jar Jar being like, a Jedi will be like, well, BB-8 is actually like the love child of R2 and the Death Star, and he will actually end up being the antagonist, maybe. Because he's a Death Star, so he's got a little evil in him.
Gosh.
So it's basically like the story of Anakin all over again.
Oh my gosh, you're right.
Yeah, oh god.
I'll tell you the most exciting thing about this new series of films is that I don't know who the protagonist is going to be, but beyond that, I don't know what the films are going to be about. Like, I know that it will be about Star Wars, you know what I mean? But like, I'm excited to see where this will go. And I know you get some people who pay closer attention know and have read leaks, but I've been trying to intentionally stay oblivious to like things that are not related to the official promotion.
Yeah, I'm curious.
Yeah.
I'm curious if they're going to do the traditional Empire like rebel fight, or if there's going to be like a three-sided fight this time around. I can't tell by the promotional materials at all, but I'm
Yeah.
I'm leaning towards thinking that there's more. This is not just a black and white. The black and white story. This is going to be something that's pretty.
There's going to be a smoke monster.
There might be. The mystery box does exist.
Can we?
The Go ahead, Ben. What?
Well, no, you go ahead. I was just going to make comments about J.J. Abrams, but we'll get to that.
No. The big thing that I've heard, and this is, I think, apparently why J.J. took the job, was Kathleen Kennedy apparently asked him, basically told him, the movie will be about, or asked the question, who is Luke Skywalker? And that's how an entire movie is supposed to be based upon, is who is Luke Skywalker now? And if you notice, that's why he's not in a lot of the promotional stuff.
True.
Is because he's not in the posters, not in the trailers.
But
he's had, the only thing he did was he had the narration in his hand.
He's a Sith Lord.
There was a photo leak of him in Jedi robes early on. One of the first things that came out was a photo leak of him in Jedi robes.
There was.
And I don't. Either they're trying to lead us astray and he really is the Sith Lord, like, just bad dude that's been, you know, hanging out for a while, or he's not, and he's just this Jedi Master that's kind of hiding out. I don't know what their game is.
He's Obi-Wan.
I don't know what their game is, but it's got me interested.
Sith Lord just hanging out, just sitting around.
Oh, dude, okay, what did Palpatine do? Palpatine sat around in a chair the whole original trilogy. He sat around, and people did his bidding. Maybe that's what he's doing, too.
But then Obi-Wan did the same thing. He sat around, between episode 3 and 4. So, it could be either way. But, yeah, that's what I heard is the main thing is, who is Luke Skywalker? And that's what they're kind of basing it around. And I don't want to reveal too much a lot of stuff is online that's actually official. But I won't go into it since you haven't read it, Ben.
I can cover my ears for a little bit if you guys want to talk about it.
I don't know if it's an Empire type thing, but I know that one thing is it's mentioned in the trailer when Kylo Ren is talking to the Darth Vader skull or mask or whatever it is, and it's called the Knights of Ren, I believe, and basically it's a group of people who are they're not Siths, but they're trying to be is what I come to.
I think they're obsessed. Out, like, they're obsessed reading. With Darth Vader. It's kind of what I think.
Darth Vader, yeah.
What and is this Sith, like? The Temple of Doom or something like that?
It could be. You never know. You never know, man. I mean,
Kalima.
Oh my god! I mean, I do not like that. Let's move on. Talk about a movie that scared me as a kid. Let's move on.
Temple of Doom.
No kidding. I can't watch it again. That movie terrified me. Although, mostly in my head, out of all the horrors in that movie, the one thing that stood out is still just, the guy getting ripped up by crocodiles.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
that bridge scene.
Bridge scene.
Yeah.
It's a great scene. But you were really terrified by the guy getting ripped apart by crocodiles? That was the thing?
Yeah, that was the one thing that freaked me out.
I guess everyone has their one thing.
Yeah, that's the one thing.
Apparently.
Crocodiles. We don't have to talk about Temple of Doom anymore. We can keep talking about Star Wars.
Anyway,
I don't know. I kind of want to talk about Short Round. Short Round. Character of all time.
One more thing about Temple. I have hated Temple of Doom for so many years, but I think I need to rewatch it because I was listening I read this thing online about why you should like Temple of Doom, and I was swayed by it. I really was about how I never really watched it as if it were a prequel to Raiders. And I always needed to keep that in mind, that it's more of a 1930s kind of treasure hunting, more for the glory kind of movie. And it's kind of, it's more like a little adventure thrill ride. It's supposed to be a little more vapid, you know? Mm-hmm. And I hadn't really thought of it in that context. So I think I should give it another shot. So
that's true. You should watch it just for Short Round. Short Round makes that movie 100% complete.
Yeah, he's adorable.
Short Round.
But I hate Willy. I have a hard time watching it because of Willy. So, she's annoying.
Is that Kate Capshaw?
She is annoying.
Kate Capshaw. Once you get a taste of Marion, you're like, oh, she's awesome. Cool lady. She's independent and the first time you meet her, she's having a drinking contest in Nepal. She's so badass. And then you go to
role Willy, model.
And she's like, oh, I broke a nail. And she, like, won't save Indy from, like, spikes coming down his head because she doesn't want to touch bugs.
Maybe it was to make us really love love everyone but her. Like, maybe it was to make us love the girl. What was her name from? It just escapes me. You just said her name.
Marion.
Yeah, maybe it's to really, Ravenwood, like, appreciate Marion, the only one they brought back. Maybe they're like, let's make the next girl really annoying so people really love Marion.
It's too bad they killed off Elsa Schneider in Last Crusade, because I love Elsa. But she's a Nazi, so she had to die.
Last Crusade.
It's my favorite one.
A lot of people argue that... Last Crusade?
Last Crusade is my favorite Indiana movie. Because of Sean Connery.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. A lot of people argue that Last Crusade is the best indie film. Indiana Jones films.
I agree.
Yeah, is that the one that the sequence starts off him as a kid with the...
Yeah, with River Phoenix.
River Phoenix.
That sequence is the best.
And, like, the one of my favorite transitions in cinema is the scene where that guy, he goes up to young Indiana and he says, you lost today, kid, but that doesn't mean you have to like it. And then he puts the hat on the kid, and then his head goes down, and then when it comes back up, he's on the ship. And then it's like, this belongs in a museum.
One of the best cuts.
Oh, so good. And he's on this massive ship, and it's waves coming over the side. God, I love that movie.
Oh, gosh.
I could talk for like an hour about Last Crusade. We should do a whole podcast on Last
Crusade.
Yeah,
let's put that on the docket.
She loves Last Crusade, and she loves Phantom Menace. Phantom Menace is one of her favorite movies.
You know what? Yeah, I do love Phantom.
Tell us what we were talking about before the show, though, was the nostalgia of it, of the films you see early and how that.
I think it's important. Yeah, I think it's important to say that when, you know, you guys are saying, "Will you love Phantom Menace?" I do love Phantom Menace, but I'm also looking at it in a different context than like someone who would have seen it a few years later or a few years older than me would have perceived it. I saw it when I was 6. I was like, I had just seen the original trilogy, and it was like the greatest thing ever, and I was just excited to have a sequel. It didn't matter. It didn't occur to me that sequels were bad. Like, it didn't occur to me to be, like, critical about new content coming from a universe that was already 20 years old or 25 years old.
Yeah.
So I saw Phantom Menace, and it was just, like, exciting and new, and I just, like, latched onto it. And by the time Attack of the Clones came out, I was, like, 9 years old or whatever. I was... you know, in a space where I was like, okay, well, actually, this movie's not that great. And by the time, you know, Revenge of the Sith came out, I was like, oh, yeah, well, this is shit. But Phantom Menace, I am attached to from a nostalgia.
I think that's worth talking about with some of these. Like, there's a whole...
Yeah, it is.
I mean, as much as this hype, as much as, like, I wrote this article saying that it's, like, it'll never live up to the hype, you know, and I'm a hater, basically, even though I'm trying not to be. There's a whole group of kids who are not...
Yeah.
You know, they haven't seen 1,000 films. They haven't seen, like, the originals. They haven't even seen the prequels. They're going to see this new film raw and for the first time, and it's going to blow their mind because... When you see something that is $250 million, $300 million or whatever, and it's the best people in Hollywood trying to make something that's mind-blowing, like, it's going to rock your world in comparison to, you know, Nickelodeon cartoons and the Disney Channel.
Yeah, I 100% agree. 100% agree. And in a couple of years, you're going to have a kid that is that age where they're going to be coming into this, and they're going to be watching Star Wars, Ben, and it's, I mean, I don't, how are you going to handle that? How do you plan, what are you going to introduce them to first? Which film first are you going to introduce?
Yeah, I've seen people online basically drop the first, you know, Phantom Menace out of the lineup. Like, basically watching them, what's the sequence where you start, you start with, it's like four.
The machete version?
Yeah. I don't know that, you know. Yeah, I mean, I do have this, like, small idea in my head of, like, oh, well, I'll introduce, like, classic films and great films in the right order and sequence, and we'll have this, like, rich discussion about their cultural implications and, you know, blah, 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 blah. But I don't know that that's real. I mean, most of the discussions we have so far are, like, stop watching people opening Disney toys on YouTube. That's not real. That doesn't count as entertainment. Like, you shouldn't watch this. And he's like, I just want to watch car toys. And that's a real... So I just, you know, I'm not trying to say the bar is low. I'm not sure that I'm going to get to, like, evenly distribute or like perfectly set up the entire Star Wars universe in just the right way. I don't know.
But you could transition him into Star Wars toys. Sounds like pretty easily.
Oh, I'm sure. Like,
get him started watching videos of people opening Star Wars toys.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what YouTube's going to start recommending to him. And they're, you know, and
if you buy him a lightsaber, what lightsaber are you going to buy him? That's my question.
Well, so let's be clear. Small individual person who wants to take every like broom and, you know, baseball or item and throw it recklessly with no regard. So I don't think there's going to be a lightsaber, but maybe outdoor lightsaber. I don't know.
Okay, I got a question. Ben, go ahead, Hunter.
No. I'll save my question. I'll reserve my question. Brandon, continue.
I'm taking numbers Ben, right now. Order number one.
Okay, Ben, if you bought yourself a lightsaber, which one would you buy yourself?
You took my question!
I don't know. What I can get tricks. A blue or what? Red one, right? Are you talking about the new, like, flared out?
Or green.
No, we're talking purple. Traditional green. Color.
Yeah, that's Samuel purple? Else.
Mace Windu.
Yeah.
Mace Windu.
Yes.
I would take whichever one's cheapest at Target. Does that make me a hater?
Oh, gosh. No, it does, Ben.
Hey, let's go ahead and put this on the table, though, since we're just embarrassing ourselves. I dressed up as Princess Leia for Halloween. That's a real thing.
No way!
Were you Slave Leia?
I wanted to be Slave Leia so bad, but the costumes were sold out, and I was, of course, buying it on, like, Thursday before Halloween. But so I was white-dressed Princess Leia with the hair buns. And I don't, if I didn't have the hair, I think that people would have just thought I was like a really ugly nun or something, like just a horrible looking person. But because of the hair buns, it was pretty clear that I was just a really ugly Princess Leia. It was pretty awesome.
You probably look like Gandalf the White walking through your neighborhood with that big old beard up yours.
Yeah. I did have a lightsaber though. It didn't light up though. That was a fail. That was a total fail.
Oh, that's lame.
What was your lightsaber?
You had a lightsaber for Princess Leia?
It was blue.
Leia, which makes no sense. It was blue.
Yeah, I know it. Look, guys. This is all like last-minute purchases to go to a party like the next day. So I tried it on. I think I put it on.
So you didn't put any...
What?
Wait, can I share my Star Wars Halloween?
Yes.
Briefly. We got a new cat, or we got a cat a few weeks ago, and we dressed him up as Darth Vader for Halloween. We went to we went to Walmart, and we found a little Darth Vader cat costume.
Amazing.
And we dressed Badoom up as Darth Vader. We played the Imperial March a lot with Badoom pounding around.
Oh, that's gosh. Amazing.
It was on my Snapchat. You guys should have seen it. I don't know.
I actually think I watched it. I think I did.
It's also on my Instagram. Hilarious.
And you went as the dude. That's what
I
you did for
I went well yeah on Friday night I went as Liv Tyler and Empire Records, but nobody knew who I was. But on on Saturday
that's,
I went
hey,
as
that's
the
a
dude.
Solid movie.
Yeah,
that's a solid movie.
Nobody Empire knew I was Records. The dude either. It was kind of sad, but
oh gosh,
it's okay.
So Hunter, what lightsaber would you pick? This is a question that's gonna
I
go
don't
around.
No. I feel like, okay, so when I played through some of the video games, I always chose green. But in hindsight, I think I might go red.
100%.
I might go red. I mean, I'd be like the nicer of the bad guys, but still, there's so many rules. There's so many rules of being a Jedi, and I don't know if I could do that. I don't know. It's okay. A big commitment, and I don't know if I'm ready to make it.
Okay, Anna, what would you go with?
I mean, I'm kind of the same. I'd suck with the lightsaber. I mean, ideally, I'd just have, like, a blaster or something. But if I had to have a lightsaber, it would be Darth Maul's lightsaber.
I want a
double-edged lightsaber so that if Qui-Gon happens to knock off one, then I can just use the other end, which is what happened.
Can I back out and say I want a bowcaster instead?
What is that? No. What, is, sure. what does that mean?
The bowcaster? Chewbacca's weapon.
Just say that. Bowcaster? Dude. What are you looking up? Wikipedia every day? Wikipedia?
Yeah, dude, I do. I read Wikipedia every day. You better hope none of those Reddit guys are listening, because they're going to make fun of you so much for not knowing what a bowcaster was.
I'm not trying to be part of their group.
They're going to tear you apart.
Like, I don't want to be part of the nerd festival. Like, I can only be so nerd and so mainstream. You know what I mean? Anyway, that's another discussion.
When were you ever mainstream, Ben?
I make attempts.
You're in Portland, Ben. Naturally going to be like just all nerd indie people.
Everyone says that, but let's be real though. There's a Portland thing, and I want to be part of that, and that doesn't include knowing what a bowcaster is necessarily.
Well, that's
going out, going off. I would pick the green lightsaber that Luke constructs between episode 5 and 6. That's what I would go with. So there you go. That's my answer. And I have a funny story about Star Wars that I told Hunter, I think, when I was at the D23 Expo, and they were showing, so they were doing Star Wars news, and like Daisy Ridley was there, John Boyega, Oscar Isaac, and then Lupita Nyong'o and Harrison Ford. Well, after the fact, they had also costumes for the characters like on the convention floor. And my roommate and I are walking around, and my roommate's taking a picture, and I'm standing like right by Rey's like costume or whatever. And I'm standing there, and then this woman comes out of nowhere and just goes, "Move! Get out of the way!" and yells at me and like pushes me out of the way. And I look around, I was like, who the hell is this person? You can't just push me out of the way. And I look, and there's a girl taking a picture in front of the Rey outfit. I'm like, who is this person? And then I realized, oh, it's Daisy Ridley. And I just got pushed out of the way by her handler. And next to her is John Boyega. And I was like, oh, wow. And I'm just standing here. And John Boyega like sees a kid in a Boba Fett outfit and like yells that he's like, Boba Fett, come here, and takes a picture with this like young, like 4-year-old kid in a Boba Fett outfit. But later on, I find the picture, or my roommate sends me the picture of Daisy Ridley online taking the picture with her costume. And if you just would pan over a little bit to the right, you see me like, who the hell is this person that's taking this picture?
Was it 20 feet from stardom?
It was like 7 feet from stardom. I was just like standing around. I was like, who is this person? Like, I literally almost ran right into Daisy Ridley. Like, no joke. It was almost, I was like,
that,
who is this person?
To be fair, that could have been the photo. It could have been like, fan runs into Daisy Ridley at D23 Expo. It could have just been you been like, oh! That would have been a much better photo.
But it didn't happen. So let's finish this up real quick. So, let's do some recommendations of things that you guys are watching that you should think the audience should be watching or whatever. So let's go with Hunter first.
Okay, I just watched a film called Victoria, which is pretty great. It's all one shot, the whole thing. It's pretty amazing. It's about a Spanish girl that's in Germany. So kind of sometimes a little hard to understand because it's kind of broken English. But it's a really great movie. If you really like the whole one shot style of Birdman, even though I know Birdman wasn't one shot, it was a bunch of shots that they kind of cut, you know, together to seem seamless.
Yeah,
this is literally one take, like one long take. It is amazing. You should watch it.
Interesting. Okay, Ben, what you got beside Portland Improv?
Oh, yeah, a lot of improv. We can talk about that some other time. I don't necessarily want to give Hunter credit for this, but he was right. Narcos is really, it's really great. and he's going to gloat about this for quite a while. But it's exciting. A brief Netflix thing, because I always have to touch on this. I'm excited that they're making so much content that is not necessarily targeted at the U.S. Like, if you look at their original lineup coming out, it's not region locked in the way that a lot of previous films and content is. Like, it's going to be produced for an international audience, but it's being made in conjunction with local film production companies in Colombia. And then, you know, the entire sections of the series in Spanish are just subtitled for us silly little Americans who don't speak Spanish. And I don't know, I like that. I like the sense of, like, a small sense of, you know, authenticity maybe than an American film company, like, busting down into, I don't know, Florida and filming for 6 weeks to make a show about Columbia or something. You know what I mean? Like, I like the setup, and I like how it's done. It's really interesting.
Cool. Anna, what you got?
What have I seen in theaters? Well, the most recent film I saw, it was, which I really liked, was Phantom of the Paradise.
No.
I don't know if you guys have seen that. It's a Brian De Palma film from 74. And it's kind of like a glam rock version of Faust is what it's kind of. There's like about this guy who writes a cantata that's about Faust, and it gets stolen by this evil record producer, and it's about him trying to like win it back, and it loosely follows or quite closely follows the story of Phantom of the Opera, but it's basically about Faust, and it's really kind of awesome, frenetic film, and it's very in line with kind of like De Palma's like cool like 70s early neon stuff, like Body Double and it's really cool. It's basically Rocky Horror Picture Show, the precursor to Rocky Horror, but it's De Palma, and it's about Faust, and I totally recommend it. It's awesome.
I just saw it last night, was Spotlight with Michael Keaton, Mark Ruffalo, Rachel McAdams, Stanley Tucci, Billy Crudup, directed by Tom McCarthy, who was Dr. Bob in Meet the Parents series, which is just great that he's now a director. But great, it's on par with All the President's Men. It's one of the best films about journalism, and it's almost like, because journalism's kind of starting to die off, but print journalism is not a big thing anymore, and it's very reminiscent and nostalgic in a way, and kind of, you fall in love with that, because these are like investigative reporters, and really great story, great acting, Keaton and Ruffalo, hopefully we'll get an Oscar nomination. So I think Keaton could win it after the Birdman loss last year. All around great film. The audience, it's always cool to me when I watch a film and I get to hear an audience react, even if it's not a comedy. And they actually not talk to scream, but like the gut reaction of like at the turns, and they're just like, they're speaking out loud what they're feeling. And Spotlight was one of the movies that did that. And It's a great story, great script. It'll be nominated for a lot, probably win a lot this year. It's the big favorite at the Oscars right now.
I got one quick thing, Brandon.
Oh, what do you got?
Sorry, no, you were saying the death of journalism, but I heard an interview with the actual reporters that broke the story, and they're, you know, on the press circuit because of the film. Yeah,
the Boston.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because they said that actually the Spotlight group, the investigative group that broke the story, they've actually grown, even though the newspaper has declined. Like, they've expanded that group, and it's still a very foundational part of the Boston Globe. And anyway, like, I don't know. We'll try and put it in the show notes if I can find it again. But I'm really excited about seeing the film based on everything you've said. I think it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. But yeah, they actually expanded over time, because it's a team on Boston Globe that actually they work on just one story that could last weeks, months, or even years of just them reporting on it, which is very not a big thing anymore. But thank you guys for coming on. Anna up in Canada, who we just decided to pick up and like say, you know what, you're gonna be on this episode tonight. And we Hunter found Anna randomly online found on Instagram.
I did. Found her on Instagram. From a Selma post. She made a Selma post.
He was working on a film, and she commented about it or whatever. And a year later, when we were putting together Medium and looking to find writers, he found her stuff, or looked more at her stuff after reading it over a year, and then found her on Facebook and saw that she had one mutual friend.
Turns out she knew you, and that was the weirdest moment of my life to date.
And he texted me, he was like, how do you know this person? And like I don't get this. And I was like, well, we Anna and I actually worked together like 2 years ago, over 2 years ago at, it's been 2 years, 2013 at the Cannes Film Festival in Cannes, France. And I was a waiter, and she worked at the coffee stand. at the good old American yep. Pavilion. It was good times. We got $20 in tips.
He would come to my stand getting you would come to my stand looking for like, I don't know, like milk and stuff. And you would always say, yeah. Hey, sugar. And I'd say, hi, honey. Because I thought it was adorable that everyone had Southern accents.
So it we had great. Nicknames.
That I learned that how to happened. Say roll tide you, to you, everything.
She learned how to say roll tide. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so.
If you think Brandon has a Southern accent, you should really go to Alabama. It'll change your life.
Let me tell you this right now.
I know, like, Brandon has the most Southern accent of anyone I know. So, I guess.
That's good to know.
White Yo, North.
In Canada, you are.
One day.
You're going to get some Southern friends.
It was just, it's a great full circle story, because here we all are. It is just amazing. Weird. It's still mind-blowing.
It's still mind-blowing.
When I think about it.
It's a small world. Small world. Thrilling. Okay, well, so thank you guys.
Glad I looked at Instagram after Selma.
Oh, gosh. Well, thank you guys for tuning in for this episode. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, follow us on Medium. We're almost posting an essay or a review or article like every day now. It's getting up there.
We've been going two-a-day lately.
Yeah, and so
it's been crazy.
Everyone's writing, so make sure you check that out. Also, check us out on Flipboard. Hunter kind of heads that one up. Also, to make sure you rate us on iTunes, because that's how we know if you guys like us or not. Write some reviews, give us some feedback, because that's the way we can improve the show. Hopefully we have more exciting stuff coming up that we're working on right now, and we'll announce it hopefully soon. So thank you guys again. Hope you tune in for later episodes.